reporter for Rebel Media Group, which can be found on Twitter as at the Rebel Media or online at rebelmediagroup.net. You can pretty much find him covering anything and everything in the world of both sports and entertainment. But he is kind enough to take a few moments here for the Triple Threat podcast today. Nick Hamilton, welcome to the show and thank you for your time today.
Hey, man, thank you guys for having me. Appreciate it.
No, absolutely, absolutely. Definitely got to get into some of this NBA stuff. But before we get into the NBA, I wanted to ask and give you a quick opportunity to tell us, when did you decide to form Rebel Media Group, and what made you decide to do that in the first place?
At the time, I had been doing this for about 6 years, working for various outlets, doing, you know, freelance work. And myself and Tamara Lotta, who's my business partner, who also owns a part in Rebel Media, decided to join forces. She had been in doing, you know, journalism and reporting for about 7 to 8 years at the time. So we just decided to join forces and, you know, bring some things together and to be able to create opportunities for other up-and-coming journalists that wanted to be a part of covering the world of sports and entertainment. And we've been rocking and rolling ever since. We're in a little over 2 years now. So, you know, we just continue to build and expand, man. It's been fun. It's been some headaches along the way, but it's been, you know, it's been fun. So, you know, we're very, very fortunate, and we definitely are open to the world of sports, no matter what sport it is.
And it's truly, you know, truly an amazing thing to see. It's always good to see brothers and sisters, you know, making it happen and doing well for themselves. Again, we are speaking to Nick Hamilton of Rebel Media. All right, Nick, we asked you to join to discuss a bit of NBA. So I'll start things off with we kind of have to go here. The Kevin Durant decision. Did it surprise you to see one of the league's top stars, you know, decide to join forces with one of the league's top teams?
It wasn't surprising. It was interesting. If that makes any sense, because when you look at what Kevin Durant has done the last 9 years in OKC, and he's only had one finals appearance this past season, he actually, you know, him and his team fell short. Even though they had a 3-1 lead over the Golden State Warriors, they still fell short. And I think, you know, he was looking at his age. He's probably looking at, you know, having a bigger role as far as his image and his presence, you know, outside the world of basketball. So going from OKC to the San Francisco Bay Area is a definite upgrade off the court, especially for his endorsements with Nike and Roc Nation. But then on the court, he has the opportunity to win a title. And he's no spring chicken, and he realizes that. You know, every day that passes, he's getting a day older. So he realizes, hey, you know what, I got to make sure I at least get a title. I've tasted what it felt like to be in the finals, but I have not tasted that sweet victory role of winning the title. So, you know, he's like, hey, man, the hell with that. I'm about to go out here and win this championship. I'm about to go get this blingage on my finger because I'm tired of my fingers being naked. So I can't be mad.
Hey,
I'm glad he did that.
And I was literally just about to say, you know, you really can't be mad at that. You know, a lot of folks, you know, they felt one way or the other about it. And I'm speaking about fans and, you know, and observers of the game. But at the end of the day, anybody in their right mind is going to take the best opportunity for themselves personally as well as professionally. So, again, you know, it's really tough to be upset about that. One last thing on that situation. Is there, in your mind, do you think that they're going to actually have a bigger target on their back than the defending champion with the team that will be the defending champion, Cleveland Cavaliers? And if you're and second part of that, is it possible that the Cavs may actually use this as motivation because they're going to be kind of a backstory, even though they're the ones that just, you know, just defeated the Golden State Warriors in the finals?
Well, as far as Golden State having the bullseye on their back, absolutely. They're going to have more hate. They're going to be what the Heat were back in 2010 when they were, you know, the rock stars of the NBA. And now the Golden State Warriors are those rock stars of the NBA. They're going to get a lot more hate, which is going to be great because – just like it is, you know, if you follow wrestling, you know, the heel is always the main attraction for the most part. You know, people love to come hate and see the heel. And that's what the Golden State Warriors are. They're the heels of the NBA right now. The faces are obviously the Cleveland Cavaliers. And as far as I'm using this as motivation, I mean, I think they're done winning the championships. I don't see them win another championship for a long time. I think they're done. I think they've reached their ceiling. I think LeBron James is still going to shine. He's an outstanding player, the best player in the game. And he proved that. I mean, he made good on his promise after 2 years of coming back. And I think Cleveland is you know, they're good with their championship. I mean, they ended a 52-year drought. You know, you can't ask for anything more. The man left, came back. You know, you treated him like dirt, and he still wanted to come back and give you guys a championship that you really didn't really deserve the way that you guys treated him on his way out. So, you know, Cleveland needs to be happy and satisfied with what they've got. And I think it's a new day, a new age. I think, you know, Golden State are the new age outlaws, so to speak. And they're going to get – I think they can get it done. I think if they remain healthy, I think they can get it done. I mean, we've seen it with the Miami Heat. You know, everybody thought that, oh, man, you know, you got LeBron and D-Wade and Chris Bosh and a bunch of, you know, role players. They're not going to win many titles. And they, you know, they won 2 out of 4, I believe. So I think Golden State can get it done. And I think Kevin Durant will be a huge piece in that.
Gotcha. Now, again, we are speaking with Nick Hamilton, reporter from Rebel Media. And, Nick, we're going to keep it out east a little bit. We're talking about the Cavs. We're talking about the Knicks. The Knicks made a lot of moves this summer, a lot of names. Not necessarily great moves, but a lot of names. You know, Joakim Noah, Derrick Rose. Courtney Lee may be the biggest underrated guy they got and might be the best fit for them. What are your thoughts on what they did this summer, and what is your forecast for them this upcoming season?
First of all, these are the Knicks. I don't put a whole lot of stock in the Knicks. I don't care what they do. It's the Knicks. It's one of the most dysfunctional organizations I've seen, next to another team that happens to be down the street from me. I think it was smart as far as getting Derrick Rose because he's on the last year of his deal, so you don't really lose anything. You can actually wipe his numbers off the books at the end of the season. I think a lot of these moves, people want to say that these are Phil Jackson moves, but I think they're, you know, Steve Mills moves. I think it seems to me that a lot of these moves, whether it was Jeff Hornacek hiring, you know, the Joakim Noah signing, the Derrick Rose trade, Courtney Lee move, it seems like, you know, they're trying to phase out Phil Jackson, little, you know, slowly but surely. And I think this may be the last year of Phil Jackson as president of basketball operations. I'm not, again, I haven't heard anything. This is all just my observation and speculation. But just the way the moves are being constructed for the Knicks, I think they'll have a decent season. I mean, they could make the playoffs in that god-awful, you know, division they call the East. They could make the playoffs. They could be a 7th or an 8th seed if they stay healthy. I think Carmelo Anthony's going to be outstanding again this year. He always is. I think he may be a little bit more comfortable having a guy like Derrick Rose as a point guard. You got a great talent in Porzingis. And, you know, so I think that they have an opportunity to make the playoffs. Now, how deep they go, anybody's guess. Again, these are the New York Knicks. Can't put a whole lot of stock in them.
Gotcha. Now, you mentioned that team down the street. We might as well get right into it. Los Angeles Lakers, the draft they've had, the summer league. Obviously, you have the Young Bucks playing at the Team USA Select team. What has been your thoughts on this summer for them? And obviously, the free agency moves, getting Timothy Mozgov, Luol Deng, and trading for Jose Calderon.
At first, I wasn't really high on the Mozgov deal. I thought he was overpaid, especially for what he's accomplished. Now everybody says, oh, well, you know, before he got hurt. Yeah, that was before he got hurt. When you have a knee injury to a big guy, that's always a major concern. Now, I hope he has a healthy season. Don't get me wrong. I never wish, you know, bad health on anybody. But it's Timothy Mozgov, and you gave him $64 million. What the hell for? The only thing I found out about is the fact that they can potentially amnesty him at the end of the season, which can potentially give him $8 to $9 million, and they can walk away, which really ain't bad. I think they brought in Mozgov more to kind of teach the young Croatian kid that they drafted in the second round, trying to get him acclimated to the league and to the system, which was kind of smart in that regard. The best pick they got was Brandon Ingram. I am completely thrilled to see Brandon Ingram in a Lakers uniform. That kid is dynamite. I got a chance to watch him playing at Duke and then up close and personal when he came out here to Anaheim for the Sweet 16 tournament. And I'm going to tell you something. It's something about that kid that is special. I think if he continues to work hard, puts on a little bit more weight, he's going to be incredible to watch for years to come, as long as they continue to surround him with decent talent and good talent. The one thing I noticed that Kevin Durant said was that he saw Brandon Ingram better than him at this particular stage of his, you know, at that particular stage of his career, which is incredible for somebody of Kevin Durant's stature to say. And I think it's absolutely true. When you look at Luol Deng, I think that was just like kind of a money move. I think it's going to be a good fit for Luol Deng and the Lakers organization as far as how Luke Walton wants to run that offense. When you look at how they want to run it, I just hope Luke Walton has a completely different mentality and doesn't try to create Golden State South, so to speak. I think he needs to come up with his own identity. You know, this is not Golden State. You don't have a Steph Curry. You don't have a Klay Thompson. You don't have a Draymond Green. You have D'Angelo Russell, who could potentially be a good one, you know, a good point guard. You have an excellent guy in Brandon Ingram. I think if
Julius Randle can figure out how to work his left, just like I can figure out who I'm about to talk about, I think we'll be on point. But I think there's a lot of factors involved. I think Jordan Clarkson is an excellent player on that squad. You know, so there's a lot of factors. They're a young team. I don't see them making the playoffs. I think they win 30-35 games this season. And then I think we see a new era upstairs with Jeannie Buss finally coming in and getting rid of Jim Buss and Mitch Kupchak. And I think Mitch Kupchak has done a really good job. I think he doesn't get enough credit that he deserves as far as being a GM and the moves that he's made with the Lakers organization, especially having a boss like Jim Buss. So that's going to be unfortunate if they happen to let him go. But I think the Lakers have some potential. The fact that no big name free agents really want to play here speaks volumes as far as the upstairs management, because you can no longer blame Kobe for not wanting free agents to come here, because I thought that was a complete BS to blame Kobe Bryant, who actually is the highlight of the Lakers organization, and nobody wants to play with him. You're going to blame him? Maybe you should look at Jim Buss and the way he's ran that organization damn near in the ground. Because that's who the culprit is. It ain't the man that puts the butts in seats. That's asinine.
Again, we're talking to Nick Hamilton of Rebel Media Group. Okay, so Nick, here's the thing that concerns me, because like you, I do worry. I don't think it should take place, but I do worry about them making a move and kind of like sweeping things aside in that front office next year. But here's the question: Do you have the same concerns over Jeannie in that role? Over, you know, like say she wants to bring Phil in, and you just mentioned a lot of those you know, moves that are seen as positive moves actually don't necessarily seem like Phil moves. So really, in terms of his track record, there's really not a lot of positivity in a front office capacity to look forward to. Or would you be concerned if that's the move?
Well, I would not be concerned if Jeannie took over, because Jeannie's a very bright person who not only runs the business but knows basketball. She's been surrounded by basketball her whole life, between her dad and, you know, Phil Jackson, who knows basketball as far as coaching. She knows the game. I have reservations on bringing Phil in as a general manager or even the president of basketball operations for the Lakers, because he hasn't done a damn thing in New York. The one good thing he's done in New York is bringing in Porzingis. That's it. Unless I'm dare to say he may have some help making that decision. So what has he really done? Outside of coaching, he's one of the greatest coaches to ever coach the game. No question about that. But when it comes to basketball operations, he stinks. So you're going to bring in a guy who has no track record, who has been paid $12 million a year, overpaid for that position, to bring him into L.A., like that's supposed to be some significant change and upgrade? You might as well keep Mitch Kupchak. At least Mitch Kupchak knows what the hell he's doing. Or how about you just promote Jerry West's son, who's been in the organization, and promote him and leave Phil out of it? Right. Maybe Phil can be a consultant as far as, you know, assessing talent, as far as looking at something from a coach's perspective. You know, maybe helping Luke out a little bit. But leave him out of the president of basketball operations arena. He stinks at that.
There's no reason why you should bring this man in.
I tend to agree with you in terms of his track record, at, you know, like as a GM or as a, you know, a president of basketball operations. It will be interesting to see if a guy like Ryan West, you know, as you mentioned, you know, Jerry's son, who's been in the organization and within the front office for several years now, it'll be interesting to see, you know, the level or the rate at which he ascends, you know, throughout this process. All right, keeping it here in the Western Conference before we run out of time here today. You know, as you both mentioned, a ton to be excited about in this Los Angeles market. Obviously, the Lakers are, you know, seemingly fully embracing the rebuilding process. But let's actually talk about the Clippers here before, you know, like I said, I know you covered the Los Angeles Clippers as well. So, and there are a ton of rumors circulating about their future. So I'll just ask you point blank, is it time for them to consider reconfiguring things with that core?
I think you have to give it at least one more year. Now, reality says that they've been at this for about 4 to 5 seasons, and it really hasn't gone anywhere. The most mm-hmm. they've gone is the second round. They digressed last year, obviously due to injury to Chris Paul and Blake Griffin at the same time, which was unfortunate and not foreseeable. But I think you have to shake some things up. I think maybe – you know, I would have tried to trade instead of trying to add Kevin Durant. I would have tried to trade for Kevin Durant for Blake Griffin, and you may have saw something different. And Kevin Durant may have signed with the Clippers in that regard. I think the Clippers went about it the wrong way as far as when they went after Kevin Durant. But now you're pretty much stuck with Blake Griffin. Not that that's a bad thing, but I think also you have to understand how is this going to work with CP3, Blake Griffin, and DeAndre, and then everybody else. They were smart to bring back some added pieces like Mo Spates, Brandon Bass, who to me was not used properly when he was with the Lakers the last season under Byron Scott. I think Doc will be able to use Brandon Bass more effectively in his role coming off the bench. You still got Wesley Johnson. You still have the 3-time sixth man of the year and Jamal Crawford, who still can bring something to the table as well as leadership in that second unit. I wasn't high on the signing of Austin Rivers as far as the money that he got. I think Austin Rivers is a decent player. I just wasn't high on the money that he got. I think you could have gotten a better value for that amount of money if you're willing to spend that amount of money. So it's going to be interesting to see what the Clippers do. I don't see them, you know, I think they're probably the third best team in the West behind Golden State and San Antonio, who made a major upgrade with Pau Gasol. And I think that, they're the third best team in the West. I think they can match up well against San Antonio. I don't think they match up well against Golden State, especially with Kevin Durant in the mix. Because you mean to tell me you're going to get somebody like a Wes Johnson or somebody of that degree to guard Kevin Durant? Are you serious? You out of your freaking mind. If you think that's going to work, you need to go get drug tested. Because there's no reason that's going to happen. Like I said, the Clippers, it's funny, man. I mean, the Clippers have so much potential. They have so much on paper that they look good on. But then they hit the court, and it's like, damn, man, you guys can't make it to the Western Conference Finals? And I think if you don't make it at least to the Western Conference Finals and go deep, I'm talking about 6-7 games deep, even if you lose to Golden State, but you go 6-7, you take Golden State to that 7th game, I think you have to say, okay, you know what, let's try to reassess some things. But I don't know. I don't know if Chris Paul is going to re-sign in L.A. after this season. I don't know if Blake Griffin is going to re-sign or want to be traded. There's a lot of factors that the Clippers have to worry about after this season. So I look at it as, you know, is DeAndre going to be a better player this year? I mean, I hope under Coach K's tutelage, as far as him working out with Team USA, I hope that he gets better, especially at the free throw line, because good Lord, 40-something percent is not going to get it done for a guy who's 6'11", 7 feet. That's a damn shame. You are 15 feet from the basket and can't make a damn free throw. That is absolutely ludicrous. So he's going to definitely have to improve on that. You may be 82% cherry picking, but from the line when it counts the most, you need to be knocking down your free throws. Even Shaq at the end of his career, I believe, was a 53-54% free throw shooter. So that's one out of two every time he goes down the stripe. If you can't get at least 50%, come on.
And Shaq famously, you know, he would always say, you know, I make them when it counts. So I'm not, I don't have those numbers up, you know, with me, but it definitely did, it did seem, you know, when the money was on the line, when, you know, or when it was an important game or an important part of the season, obviously in the postseason, he was able to at least channel, like you said, at least, you know, one out of two were, you know, right around 60%. All right, last question here.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry. No, I'm saying Shaq just, I mean, you're right. Shaq made them when he counted. DeAndre can't make them when they count or when they don't count. That's the dilemma that they're in.
Yeah, well, and we'll definitely see how it, you know, how it shapes up for them again this season. As you mentioned, I kind of feel like it's about time. The rubber has hit the road. You can't have another year with all of this talent, all of these capabilities, and not at least get past the second round. Even though I am not a fan of the Los Angeles Clippers, I would like to see that core, some of those core players, at least be able to say that they made a conference finals.
Hey, last I'm with you. I'm tired of going home early.
when you're watching everything from from a bar stool in Manhattan Beach, by the time May rolls around, that's not necessarily the best look for you if you're one of those guys. All right, we appreciate you taking your time to join us here again, Nick. But are we going to see a team out of the West challenge Golden State or, say, Cleveland in the East, or should we expect round three for the finals once again?
As far as the Western Conference goes, I think San Antonio can give them a nice run. I think they've gotten a little better. Like I said, they've been able to redesign, and I think they've learned something from that OKC loss in that series. Getting Pau Gasol was a huge pickup. I don't think people understand the magnitude of getting Pau Gasol in that type of system with Pop. So I think it's going to be a really great Western Conference Finals matchup if San Antonio happens to make it against Golden State. As far as the East goes, it's probably going to be Toronto again. You got the same cast of characters Lowry and even though Biombo is gone, which was their big-time rebounder, you know, you still have DeMar DeRozan, who is up and down like a stock exchange. So we'll see how that goes.
Jared Sellinger. Yeah, they also brought in
More like gumball pieces. But anyway, hey, you know, it is what it is. But I could potentially see a kind of a Roberto Duran, Sugar Ray Leonard 3 type of matchup in the NBA Finals between Golden State and Cleveland. And I think Golden State, you know, comes back for revenge. I think they come back stronger. They come back with a chip on their shoulder. And hopefully, you know, Draymond won't be slapping people in clubs. So he'll be free to, you know, be on the court.
That would be ideal, you know, especially, you know, midway through a series. You would hope that he can, you know, kind of keep that under control. All right, Nick Hamilton, thank you once again for joining us today. Before we get you out of here, can you let the folks know all of the different places they can find your material, where they can see you? You know, where can people get all of your content?
Yeah, most definitely. You can scream at me on Twitter at Nick Hamilton LA. That's at Nick Hamilton LA on Twitter and Instagram. You can hit us up at The Rebel Media on Twitter. Hit us up on YouTube at The Rebel Media Group. I have a lot of interviews. I got a lot more stuff coming up. We have reports coming from Team USA when they come on Sunday when they play China at Staples Center. So we'll have updates and interviews from Staples Center with that. Also, baseball season, second half of the season. This is crunch time for the Dodgers and Angels. So we have all that covered for you. And then also we have a podcast on SoundCloud.com/TheShop1, like the number one. It's myself, Tamara Lotta, Jay from Compton, and we got together, man. We're pretty much the Breakfast Club of sports. So check us out.
Okay.
And subscribe. Please. Thank you so much, and I appreciate you guys having me on, man. And let's do this again.
No, without a doubt, as we get closer to the season, we definitely have to. Because obviously we only touched on a few things today, but we definitely appreciate your time, Nick. Everybody be sure to follow him and subscribe at all of those channels that he just mentioned. We'll be back here on the Triple Threat Podcast. We're joined by B-Ball Breakdown's James Hollis, also known as the Prince of Temecula or the Road Trip King. You know him as the outspoken at Snobby Dripping on Twitter if you're on there. And James, thank you for joining the Triple Threat this week.
Thanks for having me, fellas. I'm always down to talk basketball. A great offseason so far.
It absolutely has been. So, you know, with that said, let's go ahead and jump right to it since I guess time is somewhat limited today. While there's still rumors about the Celtics and potential trade targets, Boston's big move so far this summer, or at least one of them, was is one that I wanted to see take place, and I believe that you did as well. It's an Al Horford joining the mix. What are your thoughts on Boston's offseason, which includes also, you know, what some have called addition by subtraction with the losses of Evan Turner and Jared Sullinger?
Anyone who follows me and knows me, I haven't been exactly happy with the move that Danny Ainge has made so far coming up to this point. But signing Al Horford turns everything around to me. It gives a certain sense of legitimacy to the Celtics franchise because up until now, I get it, Isaiah Thomas made an all-star team, but it's a bunch of role players, you know, with no star, no hub to actually spin around. Al Horford may not be a LeBron James or Kevin Durant level type player, but he feels to me top 10, top 15. He has no real holes in his game, and he's a great player to build around. So, the fact that Danny Ainge kept things to a level that a player like Al Horford would just willingly say, I want to come sign with you guys, that does mean a lot. Evan Turner's gone, and I can do two things. I can admit how useful he was, and he filled a role. I can also say that I'm glad to see him gone because he was my least favorite Celtic for some reason. He irked me. And also his game's not even old school. He had that weird game where mid-range game, decent ball handler, not bad defender, can't shoot threes. That's what really killed it. Now, our three-point shooting needs to improve. Celtic's three-point shooting needs to improve a lot this year. And then with Jared Sullinger, his time with Mark was a disappointment. I know it was always about potential with him, but he never got himself in shape. He never really decided he wanted to be, that's it. I mean, if you can't get yourself in shape as an NBA player, you're not taking your crap very seriously. So I wish him best wherever he goes next. I know he's in Toronto now, I think, so that's fine. But, yeah, time for him to go. And then today Boston just signed Gerald Green today. I'm not sure exactly what the point of that move was. Gerald Green has shown in the last stop in Miami that tantalizing talent aside, he's just not a very good NBA player right now. So, but yeah, all in all, very strong offseason. Even the Jaylen Brown signing, I think, for the time, okay. I would rather have Marquise Chris at that spot, but Brown's going to be a certified stud, small forward, and that's what the game's all about wings these days, so I don't mind very much. So far, very strong offseason for Boston.
Yeah, especially when you're playing in a conference with LeBron James. We can talk about all the other teams, and obviously we're going to get to a few of them, here coming up. But if you're playing in a conference that you're going to have to go through LeBron James or even Kyrie Irving, you're going to need perimeter defenders. You're going to need guys that are versatile, versatile defenders like a Jaylen Brown. So I understand and I can appreciate that pick as well. Let's talk about a couple more teams in the East. Derrick Rose, he's been getting kind of land-based. He's been getting kind of, clowned a little bit for referring to the Knicks as a super team. I respect Rose for his confidence, and I definitely think they'll be improved and actually should be in the playoffs if everybody remains even relatively healthy. But how much more of a true super team are they than, say, like that Nets team that, was put together a few years back where Brooklyn basically assembled the all AARP team of former Celtics, Joe Johnson, and table scraps?
I'm going to say that they might even pale in comparison to the Nets team because at least the Nets team, you knew that Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett, even the season before, have been very productive, even if limited by injuries or whatever. But, yeah, Rose hasn't been the same since, the injury in 2012. I think Joakim Noah might just be about almost to the point of being washed up where it's just he's had so many hard miles on him that I don't know if he'll ever be that player again that he was. I still believe in Melo. I think people look down on Melo, so I think he's really the main factor that I think people are overlooking. I think he's becoming a little underrated because of the injuries his last year and some change. But, yeah, my thing with Derrick Rose is how just his lack of awareness, man. Remember he made that statement while he was still with Chicago about, yeah, I can't wait to get paid in a couple of years, when I hit free agency. I mean, that's what are you even talking about that for? And, the thing, he just has a certain lack of self-awareness, or maybe he's just so self-aware he doesn't care. I'm not sure. But, yeah, they're not a super team at all, and I'm going to disagree with you. I don't see them making the playoffs.
Ooh. Now, is that because the East, you know, the East around them is so improved? No, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jordan.
They're not a super team. They're not a super team. I do see them making the playoffs if they manage to stay healthy. I think the pieces are in place. But I'm also going to take what Derrick Rose said. I'm going to keep it in perspective because I'm not in New York. I don't understand what the vibe is. Sometimes it's easy to get caught up in the current vibe going around the particular city that you're playing in. I've seen that here in Utah. So let's keep it in perspective. The fact that New York has not been relevant for a very long time, even though they're getting a Derrick Rose who can't stay healthy, they're getting a Joakim Noah. I agree with James. I think he's a spent player at this point. Even though they're bringing in guys that are well past their prime, that's the word I'm going to use here, they're still bringing in names, and that creates excitement, specifically in a city like New York, who is so hungry for some sort of name recognition with basketball that it's probably a little bit difficult not to get caught up in the hoopla that has to be surrounding that city. I keep what he says in perspective. They're not a super team. I think they are a postseason team. I don't think they're going to compete for home court advantage in the opening round. I think that we're going to see them anywhere between a 6 all the way down to around 9, I think, in the Eastern Conference. I think is a fair spot to put this team right now. But they're relevant again, and because of that, people in New York are talking about the Knicks. That's why I keep what Derrick Rose said in perspective.
Speaking of a team that has also added a few pieces that you know, may or may not be healthy this this upcoming season, is there a way, in either of your opinions, that Fred Hoiberg and the Bulls can make this trio of, you know, Butler, Wade, and Rondo at least even into a second-tier Eastern Conference contending team this season?
Yeah, there's sure a way. They can trade Rondo and bring in a point guard as a shoot. Because that was peculiar to me. Even though Rondo came in first before Dwayne Wade, he's the odd man out. Because, again, with players of Jimmy Butler and then Dwayne Wade's caliber, both of those guys can handle the ball, and even if they're playing two guard, or in this case, both would be a small forward, both those guys are perfectly capable of initiating the offense. So now you have Rondo, who's now redundant, and he can't shoot. So that's the thing that hurts the most, I think, in that the Chicago offseason. That Rondo just doesn't fit. I don't know why they would do that. So Wade and Butler, Wade Butler and the young guys they got, Portis, Miritich, those guys. If I saw that, well, hey, that'd be a fun team. Rondo is the fly in the punch bowl.
Yeah, this team to me right now, if you look at it, like outside of McDermott and Miritich, I don't know if anybody on this team can consistently hit a 17-18 foot jump shot. Like, this may be one of the worst shooting backcourts. I mean, you look at what Dwayne Wade did from beyond the perimeter last year; it wasn't good. As James just mentioned, you know, Rajon Rondo, he can't shoot. So you look at the backcourt, and they're not a threat from beyond the arc. To me, this roster is still incomplete. Yes, Rondo probably is the odd man out. And the crazy thing is, if you look at Rondo's value around the league, I don't know what you get for him if you trade him. Is it one of those deals where it is addition by subtraction? I think only time will tell. I think we have to see this team play. I don't believe that they're going to be a contender for the Eastern Conference crown. Again, I would put them in the bottom half of the Eastern Conference. As far as playoff teams go, I think that they're on the verge. You know, I'd go ahead and put them in that same situation with New York. I think they could finish anywhere, you know, from 5 all the way down to 9. I'm still not sold on Hoiberg with that. And, again, this roster to me just looks a little bit incomplete.
Yeah, it does. And I asked the question kind of tongue-in-cheek because, you know, and no disrespect to, you know, to the Bulls or to Bulls fans, I just don't understand, you know, the makeup of that trio. And yes, I was trying to be nice about it, but, you know, since we have a Boston supporter on here that can be real about Rondo, I also agree that Rondo simply is the odd man out. I know he put up decent numbers last year, some good assist numbers, obviously. You know, he still remains the ball-dominant individual that he has been. And I'm not saying that as a knock because I know some people, you know, they see it as, you know, as an extreme. I just, given where the league is now, given the fact that he's still, you know, I know that he's improved as a three-point shooter, but, you know, if you go to just bad, I guess that's improvement. I just don't see Rondo as an effective player at, you know, as a top or anywhere near a top tier guy, you know, that he was at one point, or at least that he was seen as at one point. All right, let's quickly take it out west for a few minutes, and while we won't get into each team, let me get your thoughts on the Durant decision. Second, which of the Western Conference, you know, or which of the Western Conference teams stand the best chance of knocking off Voltron by the Bay?
As an NBA fan, it kind of makes me a little sad, only because, I mean, I love the competition. I love the spirit of watching OKC try to dethrone them. They were up 3-1, man. That was just a rollicking series. And the pain that I felt as an NBA fan watching them choke away that 3-1 lead. So it makes me feel a little bad that Durant would take. Honestly, we can couch it any way we want. We try to parse it, but he took the easiest way out. He wants a championship, mm-hmm. which is understandable. Everyone wants a championship. He took the easiest way, which, I mean, can we blame him? On one hand, you will say no, but then, I mean, this is not what I want to see. People have dug up the old tweets of KD saying, you know, what happened with players with all this teaming up stuff? Right, let's see guys go at each other. And I think I read an ESPN article about this, and I believe it. I think he's very susceptible to the people around him because it seems mm-hmm. like this is like Kevin Durant that we've known for the last 8-9 years. I guess his camp is really pushing for this, and it's all hearsay, right? But I believe it because he went from tweeting about not really being down with Tupac, and now he has 2x tattoo on his leg. He's a young guy. now he's a grown man, but it is what it is. I think long-term it will affect his legacy because he's going from being, you know, that guy on the team to now he wants to be one of the guys in Golden State, an established team. So it's just my perception of him a little bit, but I'm not mad at him. I don't hate him. I'll still watch when he plays. But, yeah, it's kind of disheartening.
You know, I don't hold anything against Kevin Durant. At the end of the day, he will be making more money this year than he made last year, and he took a – let's be real, he took a better job. And I think when you look at it from that perspective, who can fault him for doing what he did? Now, we've had this conversation several times. The NBA today is more of a fraternity than it has rivalries. And that's why something like this will happen more and more frequently. Then on top of that, when you look at how this guy is getting paid, he's going to make more money off of shoe deals than he will actually playing for the Golden State Warriors. Like, that has to be, you have to calculate that into what an individual does nowadays. With the NBA, it's a completely different landscape than it once was. That's why when you have somebody like Reggie Miller and Charles Barkley come out, you know, and they take some shots at Kevin Durant, look, it's a completely different game today. It's a completely different business today than it was when these guys were in their heyday, when they were going through free agency. It's completely different. So I'm not mad at Kevin Durant. As far as a team that can contend with them in the Western Conference, look, outside of Kevin Durant, we have to look at some of the other moves that Golden State made that bolsters this roster, going out and getting David West, going out and getting Zaza Pachulia. Like, these are moves that solidifies Golden State as the top team in the Western Conference. Casual fans are going to love it. Casual fans will love to hate Golden State, or they will love to love Golden State. It's good for marketing. It's good for the NBA. Now, the hardcore fans and the media, they may not necessarily like it as much, but it's good. I mean, when you look at the competitive standpoint in the Western Conference, really there's only one team that this truly affects from removing them from a championship picture, and that's Oklahoma City. That's legitimately the only team that it removes from the championship picture when we look at realistic options to win an NBA title going into the season. It's the only team that it truly affects removing from. You know, San Antonio, I thought San Antonio made some good moves. I think they have some backcourt problems, but all in all, I think that San Antonio has improved. I think that Portland continued. That's a team that I'm really, really excited about. I love watching Portland. I think the Jazz improved drastically. That's a 50-plus win mm-hmm. team, I think, going into this season. So, you know, all in all, when you look at the competitive standpoint in the Western Conference, it really affects only Golden State. Now, I know that – Oklahoma City. Now, I know that Golden State improved drastically, but still, I'm only removing one team that I viewed as having a realistic chance of winning a championship, and that's Oklahoma City.
Well, that's really nice of you. I'm going to jump in here. I'm going to jump in real quick and say that I'm going to – imagine all these other teams, they sit there, they're a star, you know, Kawhi sits for a minute, LaMarcus, and Golden State still has Kevin Durant and Draymond on the floor. It's an impossible nightmare. So while you're right, only OKC really falls back and all the rest of the guys added and made incremental steps forward, Golden State made what should be a quantum leap forward. And I don't see any team realistically be throwing them. Maybe the Clippers at full strength can pull off a shocker. I don't know if San Antonio now has what it takes anymore. I really think that they've got bigger and a little older and a little slower. Even though Tim Duncan's gone, they really haven't replaced that kind of defensive middle. So what team realistically has a shot? San Antonio, you can't bet against Pop, but you're going to have to get bet against him here. The Clippers, if they can somehow dig really deep and find something, another gear. But, no, that Golden State team should be a nightmare in the West.
That's fair. That's fair. Hey, guys, what happened to the Cavs? You guys remember them? You know, and I'm saying that obviously, you know, jokingly, but is the target for the Warriors that they're undoubtedly going to be wearing, is it realistically going to be bigger than the one the actual defending champions rocked throughout this year?
Well, it's funny because I know going into next season, this is exactly what Cleveland's going to do. They're going to ride the, you know, we're being disrespected mantle, as they should, because the move for Kevin Durant changed everything this offseason. And we don't even talk about, you know, we barely talk about Cleveland and their accomplishment, their recent accomplishment, which is amazing what they've done. And they still have LeBron James. They still have Kyrie Irving. They still have Kevin Love. And they're going to be great next year. Now, they barely beat Golden State with, you know, maybe a limited Steph Curry and you know, Dray missed the game. Bogut got hurt. That's all that happened, and they won in Game 7. Now Golden State has added, you know, the 2014 MVP and one of the best scorers the league has ever seen. It's Cleveland's going to be right there. And if I'll say this, I'm going to say they're going to meet in the finals next year. When they meet, LeBron James will overcome that Golden State team. That means a lot of things will have to change about how we talk about him and his legacy. However, if that team can gel the way we think they're going to gel, I mean, it's going to be worth watching.
Cleveland, the reason why we're not talking about Cleveland is they haven't done anything this offseason. I mean, really, when you take a look at it, they have not improved their team. They've lost a lot of free agents. They haven't made a splashy move. And I think as far as Golden State going in with a bigger, you know, bullseye on their back, absolutely they are, because it's somewhat similar to, you know, you go back to 2010 when LeBron and Chris Bosh joined Dwayne Wade in Miami. The Lakers were the two-time defending champions that year going into that season. But everybody focused on the Miami Heat that offseason. And that was the talk of the entire league. Like, everybody wanted to see – you either wanted to see Miami win 80 games or you wanted to see Miami lose 80 games. And I think it's going to be a very similar situation with Golden State. Yeah, they absolutely have a bigger bullseye on their back than Cleveland. And as James said, I think Cleveland will embrace that. At the end of the day, Cleveland still has the best player in the world in LeBron James on their team. Yeah, they've been forgotten because, again, you look at a guy like J.R. Smith isn't even signed yet. They have done nothing – on this roster this season to improve their team. They're staying pat, and I think they're also in a situation to where it's very difficult to improve your team at this point in time without moving the likes of a Kevin Love or a Kyrie Irving, which is out of the question at this point because you just won a championship. So it's a difficult situation for Cleveland this offseason.
No, without a doubt. And the thing with Cleveland, and we don't necessarily have time to get into this today, but I definitely look forward to you know, picking this up again, especially once they start to, you know, once they start to make a couple moves. But I think Cleveland's kind of sitting in the weeds, just waiting, biding their time. I do agree that they're not going to, you know, they're not going to move Kevin Love right after winning a title. But I'll throw this one out there. I actually mentioned this to you, Jordan, I think a couple weeks back. I think if we get to around the trade deadline and say Chicago hasn't put it together, and Cleveland, you know, is right around, you know, where they're expected, but, you know, they don't necessarily look like they're going to be able to, you know, dethrone. Oh, I guess that's a Freudian slip. Like, they don't look like they'll be able to knock off, you know, like, you know, what will eventually be the Warriors. I wouldn't be shocked to see them, you know, have that discussion again about Dwayne Wade and, you know, Kevin Love at that stage. But again, we'll cross that bridge when we have to. We'll wrap with this one coming up, and again, I want to thank James Hollis of B-Ball Breakdown for joining us here today. But with all the money that was doled out this summer, now we're also hearing, you know, we're already hearing rumblings about a potential lockout next summer when it is presumed the two sides will renegotiate their collective bargaining agreement. I think it was Pat Riley and perhaps, you know, some others that suggested the NBA really consider adopting an organizational franchise tag, kind of, you know, a la the NFL, in order to keep more star players from leaving their markets. James, do you anticipate a lockout that some are suggesting? And if so, do you think it will impact 2016-2017 games?
I think it's going to be a stare down always at the last minute, and at the 11th hour they're going to back away, because I'm almost feeling that next year's finals is going to be so great. Next year's playoff run should be so, you know, these guys, they want money, and they're going to make a lot of money next season. And they don't want to lose money the season after. So I'm hoping that that both sides realize that a lockout doesn't help anyone. They're going to stare down to the last second, and they're going to come up with something. So we're not going to lose any game next season. That's what I'm hoping.
Okay, good. And quickly, you've got about 2 minutes here. Could either of you see the Players Association and the owners agreeing on even a variation of this franchise, the franchise tag for players, given the fact that player movement is already an issue and something that's, you know, pretty much made extremely difficult for guys as it is?
I don't think the Players Union will ever allow that to happen, because then you're locking in that's restricting player movement in a way that they've fought so long to make sure it doesn't happen. So, no, I think free agency is a key that the player union cannot back down on. They can't allow that to happen. They can only, I mean, they can make it like, you know, they can make it as beneficial as possible for the incumbent team to have, you know maybe add another year, add even larger raises or whatever. But for them to add any kind of franchise tag to a player, that would be, I think that'd be a crushing blow to what the player union has been doing for the last, you know, 30, 40 years.
Yeah, I don't see any way that that possibly, you know, comes to fruition in the NBA. I mean, all you really have to do is take a look at the NFL. Look at the way players view the franchise tag right now. And I don't know how in tune you are with the way, you know, the franchise tag works in the NFL. But, I mean, players are not happy with it. That's something that once the current agreement in the NFL, once it expires, that's something that I would expect big movement on. I understand, you know, it's funny because Pat Riley – you know, they always bring up ideas of changing the current collective bargaining agreement when something comes back to sting them. You know what I'm saying? Like Dan Gilbert was not happy with the way the NBA was moving, and he made the comment about when are we going to change the other team names of the Washington Sentinels and or the Washington Generals. And, you know, all in all, when you look at it, it seems like owners and general managers only complain when something does not work in their favor with a big-time star. I mean, Dan Gilbert was furious when LeBron James bolted. Dan Gilbert has no problem with the current makeup of his team. He had no problem with trading, you know, a draft pick and Andrew Wiggins for Kevin Love. And at the time, it looked like a steal. And you can debate that now in hindsight. But it just seems like, you know, Pat Riley, guys like that, they're only outspoken when something comes back that doesn't benefit them. So, no, I don't think that's going to happen. I am very curious to see, you know, what negotiations take place when the current CBA moves out. There's plenty of things that need to be fixed, but I don't believe that adding a franchise tag helps anybody.
I agree with each of you. If you're the Players Association, you absolutely cannot accept this. It's just, you know, you've already kind of, I don't want to say, you know, taking it in terms of you've given up your 53-47 split. You've already, accepted, you know, a few things. I guess in order to benefit monetarily, but from a player movement standpoint, I agree with each of you. You just can't let this happen. James, thank you so much for joining us today. Let the folks know where they might be able to find your material.
Thanks for letting me come on and blabber, man. I appreciate it. You can find me on Twitter. It's at Snotty Griffin. It's an homage to one of my favorite players, Scottie Pippen. So just how you spell that? Make it sound like Snotty Griffin. And over on BYBreakdown.com, we're doing a lot of things this summer, and I'm the worst guy over there. So don't let your impression of me
He's
stop
lying.
Going to BY Breakdown. So,
He's
yeah,
absolutely
that's
lying,
it,
folks.
Man. I'm looking
nah,
forward
to it. I'm going to go ahead and cut in. He's not the worst one there. He's one of the better ones. He's one of the most entertaining follows on Twitter and an all-around good guy. Sorry, I know I jumped you, but I did. I can't let you out humble. I can't let you humble your way off the show. When you know it's just not true.
I appreciate that, man. I'm looking forward to talking to you guys again soon.
Absolutely, our pleasure, man. Thanks again.
All right, brother.